Isaiah chapter 35. Isaiah's ministry, as we know, began near the end of King Uzziah's reign over the southern kingdom of Judah. And from chapter 1 and verse 1, we see that his ministry would continue through the reigns of Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah. It was during the reign of Jotham that Assyria emerged as a world power, conquering the nations surrounding the northern kingdom of Israel and also conquering Israel. The southern kingdom of Judah, which is where Isaiah is, was also at this time being threatened by Assyria. And Isaiah preached to them during this time, warning them of God's coming judgment due to the fact that they were guilty of the same sins as the northern kingdom of Israel. So Isaiah warns of coming judgment, but not from where you would think, not from the immediate threat of Assyria, but from Babylon. So he preached through some very tumultuous years. He not only foretold of the coming captivity, but he also foretold of a time when God would deliver them from the captivity. So his message was a message of captivity and deliverance. A message of captivity and hope. It follows the meaning of his name. God is salvation, or Jehovah is salvation. So, though his message is a message of warning, it's also a message of hope and expectation. And the message of Isaiah goes beyond Babylonian captivity to an even greater captivity, the captivity of sin, death, judgment, and hell, and goes beyond deliverance from Babylon to the salvation of the soul. So it goes beyond the southern kingdom of Judah. It affects God's people today. So I want to read this 35th chapter. There's 10 verses. The wilderness and the solitary place shall be glad for them, and the desert shall rejoice and blossom as the rose. It shall blossom abundantly and rejoice even with joy and singing. The glory of Lebanon shall be given unto it, the excellency of Carmel and Sharon. They shall see the glory of the Lord and the excellency of our God. Strengthen ye the weak hands and confirm the feeble knees. Make steady the feeble knees. Say to them that are of a fearful heart, be strong, fear not. Behold, your God will come with vengeance, even God with a recompense. He will come and save you. Then, when God comes, the eyes of the blind shall be opened, and the ears of the deaf shall be unstopped. Then shall the lame man leap as a hart, and the tongue of the dumb sing. For in the wilderness shall waters break out, and streams in the desert. And the parched ground shall become a pool, and the thirsty land springs of water. In the habitation of dragons where each lay shall be grass with reeds and rushes. And a highway shall be there, and a way, and it shall be called the way of holiness. The unclean shall not pass over it, but it shall be for those the wayfaring man, though fools shall not err therein. No lion shall be there, nor any ravenous beast shall go up thereon. It shall not be found there, but the redeemed shall walk there. And the ransomed of the Lord shall return and come to Zion with songs and everlasting joy upon their heads, and shall obtain joy and gladness, and sorrow and sighing shall flee away. The subject of this chapter is God delivering and restoring His people. There are several different angles that you can look at this chapter. What we read here, of course, most certainly relates to the terrible condition and the miraculous restoration of Judah from Babylonian captivity. But it goes beyond that to God's people today. And this chapter goes beyond the fact that God would deliver them from Babylonian captivity to the deliverance that would take place when Christ came in the incarnation. Your God will come. He will save you. I believe that's a reference to Jesus Christ. And what we read here also goes beyond that to the millennial reign of Jesus Christ. This chapter is a millennial promise. That being said, prophecy is a means of teaching biblical truth for today. But as you read through the chapter, you cannot help but notice that there is a miraculous transformation that is produced by God for and in His people. Isaiah, under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, uses very graphic words in describing the condition that Judah had succumbed and also the glorious possibilities that were theirs. So I want to speak this morning on the mind-boggling, transforming power of God. Our first thing we want to consider is the condition to which God's people can succumb and do. In verse 9, the people of God are referred to as the redeemed. And in verse 10, they are referred to as the ransomed of the Lord. Those two words, redeemed and ransomed, convey the idea of those who are atoned and paid for. Not only atoned and paid for, but they have been delivered. They have been released. They have been liberated. They have been retrieved by God. They are words of salvation. Know how we ought to thank God that we are the redeemed and the ransomed of the Lord. So it concerns these people, the redeemed and the ransomed of the Lord. And again, our text is a graphic illustration. Again, God, Isaiah is foretelling, you are going into captivity because you are guilty of the same sins as the northern kingdom. And the chapter is a graphic illustration of the spiritual depths into which the redeemed and the ransomed of the Lord can find themselves in. He describes their place. In verse 1, he uses three words to describe their place: wilderness, solitary place, and the desert. The wilderness is an uncivilized place. It's an aimless place without direction. It can be a very bewildering place. Being a bewildering place, it becomes a very restless place. be a place of great discomfort. No doubt a place of danger, considering that you can fall into traps, considering that you can be maimed and come out with many injuries and wounds. And certainly the world is a wilderness, and the redeemed and the ransomed of the Lord may find themselves in a spiritual wilderness. Also, Isaiah speaks of the solitary place, a place of isolation, conveying the idea that you're on your own in the middle of nowhere. And though that is most certainly true of the world, it is also descriptive of the spiritual position of the redeemed and ransomed of the Lord at times. Notice also the desert. That's a wasteland. It's a place that's barren. You look out, it's very stark. It's unfruitful. It's empty. It's a very bleak place, conveying the idea of the monotony of pathless sand. And once again, that is descriptive of the world in which we live. But once again, it is also descriptive of where God's people may find themselves spiritually at times. And then notice verse 7. You have the parched ground, that which has been scorched, dried up, it's withered, it's shriveled. And again, that too can be descriptive of the world in which we live. But again, it's also descriptive of where God's people can succumb spiritually. Notice also there in verse 7, you have the thirsty land, that which is hard and stale. You also see the habitation of dragons, that which is poison and harmful and destructive. And again, all of this is certainly can be used to describe the world, the wilderness, the solitary place, the desert, the parched ground, the thirsty land, the habitation of dragons. Also speaks of a situation and condition of trouble, of distress, misery, suffering, grief, sorrow, pain, affliction, all due to sin. He's again describing the condition of the nation of Judah, the place where they found themselves. He goes on to describe their condition, and he uses several words to do this. And again, he's speaking graphically of their spiritual disabilities due to sin. Mentioned in verses 3 and 4 are the hands, the knees, and the heart. And you'll notice that the hands, that's the instrument in which we work, they're weak. That is, they're very frail. They are ailing. They have become decrepit. They're defective and deficient in some way. And then you have the knees. Without your knees, you do not have the ability to walk. So it speaks of our ability to walk, our ability to stand. And the knees are said to be feeble. That is, they're unsteady. They're ineffective. And the heart, That's the inward us. It's who we are. It's said to be fearful. That is, it's filled with alarm. It's filled with panic. It's very apprehensive. It's very anxious. And all of this, of course, has spiritual application. And the redeemed and the ransomed of the Lord can find themselves in a very weakened, feeble, and anxious spiritual condition. In verse 5, they are blind. That is, they live in spiritual darkness and ignorance, and they are deaf. They are unable to hear the instructive and comforting voice of the Lord. Again, he's describing the condition of Judah. And it's the condition that the redeemed and the ransomed of the Lord can find themselves in. We can find ourselves in a state of spiritual blindness. We can find ourselves in a state of spiritual deafness. In verse 6, there are the lame, the spiritually disabled, and there are the dumb. And in the context, you see that these are the spiritually silent. And again, the redeemed and the ransomed of the Lord can find themselves spiritually in these places. So with all of that being said, the people of Judah, this describes their condition. How'd they get there? Well, they had ignored God. They had filled themselves with human ideas and pagan philosophies. God would send prophets to them, but they would not listen. They would not take the message of God seriously. And they just began to move further and further and further from God. And as they did so, they began to dismiss God from their thoughts. And when you do that, you begin to dismiss God from your life. And once you dismiss God, you have to have something to fill that void. So you put other things in the place of God, which causes you to be busy in other pursuits, causing you to put more esteem and emphasis upon fleshly things and worldly things than God. And they took the blessings of God for granted. And now we see the grim, the dreadful, the miserable results of such here in Isaiah 35. They now spiritually dwelt in the wilderness. They spiritually dwelt in the solitary place and in the desert. They spiritually dwelt in the place of parched ground and thirsty land, a place of dragons. And their hands are weak, their knees are feeble, their heart is fearful. And they are spiritually blind, deaf, and lame, and dumb. They are in a state of spiritual decay. And Isaiah's message is for that people. And today, the overall condition, I'm not saying everyone, the overall condition of God's people is this. The overall condition of God's people is that there is a frightful friendship with the world and an appalling adoption of the philosophies and ideals of the world. Worldliness has so gripped the hearts and minds of God's people that they have all but lost their spiritual appetite and are now satisfied with mere lip service. But it'll move beyond that. Pretty soon there won't even be lip service. Half-hearted devotion. Content with a mere form of godliness. The world has engulfed the lives of God's people. And Satan is very clever. He gives everyone their own definition of worldliness, so no one's guilty. And now, lives are characterized by unbelief rather than faith. This is the overall condition. Not everyone has succumbed to this. More characterized by worry than assurance. More characterized by frustration than peace. More characterized by discouragement and misery than joy. More characterized by doubt rather than godly conviction. More moved by the opinions of man than thus saith the Lord. More influenced and impacted by the world's ways than the ways of the Lord. And like the people of Judah, many of the redeemed and ransomed of the Lord find themselves in a wilderness, a solitary place, a desert, in a place of parched ground, in a thirsty land, in a place of dragons. And their hands are weak, and their knees are feeble, and their hearts are fearful. And they're spiritually blind and deaf and lame and dumb. Again, a state of spiritual decay. And Isaiah's message is to that people. He is saying, this is what you've become. But there is a glorious possibility that exists. And that will be our second point. How thankful we ought to be that in a day when so many, so very many of God's people have had their hearts stolen and have fallen victim to the traps of the flesh, the world, Satan, and the times in which we live, and have had their spiritual interest, and their spiritual enthusiasm and conviction consumed by the world, the flesh, the times in which we live. And they're more willing, they would deny it, but they're more willing to invest in the world than they are God. And the truth is, they're more invested in the world than the spiritual. They're more dictated by the world than they are the spiritual. They're dictated more by self than God. We live in a very narcissistic society. And for a time, we could look out and you could almost put it in generation. Parents have created a bunch of narcissists today. But that being said, living in a narcissistic society, if we're not careful, we become that way. Because I'm going to look out for myself now. That's the way we become. And today, churches are overrun with narcissism. It's not just out there. It's everywhere. And people have become accustomed. They've done it for so long, they don't even realize they do it. They have become accustomed to quenching the Spirit of God. And the ability to worship is almost extinct. The ability almost does not exist anymore. So what do? We dumb down worship so people think that they're worshiping. There is such a, in these days, we ought to thank God that there is such a thing as spiritual uplifting. There is such a thing as a spiritual recovery. There is such a thing as a spiritual awakening, a spiritual stirring, a spiritual energizing, a spiritual rejuvenating, a spiritual transformation. So in this day of instability and inconsistency, in this day of habitual hypocrisy, in this day of do-it-yourself Christianity, and in this day when sins are being sanctified, and in this day of emergency religion, there is such a thing as a spiritual transformation. And that is what is being described here in Isaiah 35. Again, it has its fulfillment in the millennium. But there are important lessons for you and I today. There is still such a thing as the transforming power of Almighty God. And what is described here in our text, man and religion cannot produce. What is described in our text, you cannot legislate. What is described in our text is beyond human ability. It is beyond human planning. It is beyond all the methods of man, all the calculations of man, and all the expense, all the money you can throw at it. None of those things can create what is described here in Isaiah 35. What is described here is the miraculous, is the result of the miraculous work of God. And it is a glorious possibility. It's where you and I can live. It's what we can experience in our lives. Now notice, in verse 1, you read the words glad, rejoice, and blossom as a rose. What's he telling us? He's telling us in this day that there is such a thing as a spiritual gladness, a spiritual rejoicing, a spiritual blossoming, a spiritual beauty. It doesn't have to be a wilderness. It doesn't have to be the solitary place and the desert. There is such a thing as gladness and rejoicing, blossoming and beauty. And in verse 2, this is emphasized again. Notice the words, blossom abundantly. And then notice, rejoice even with joy and singing. And also notice that word, glory, splendor, delight. And notice what it is. Glory, and then notice excellency. Something spiritually wonderful. And notice also that there is a seeing of the glory of the Lord and the excellency of our God. Also in verse 3, there is a strengthening and a steadiness to be had. And in verse 4, there is a calmness of spirit to be possessed and a deliverance. And in verses 5 and 6, there is an ability beyond one's own ability. In verse 6 and 7, there is a miraculous abundance to be had. Notice the words, waters, streams, a pool, springs of water, grass with reeds and rushes. In verses 6, or in verses 8 and 9, there is a safe place to walk. It's called the highway of holiness. No lion shall be there, nor ravenous beast. There is a safe place to walk. You don't have to walk in the wilderness. You don't have to walk in the solitary place. You don't have to walk in the desert. There is a safe place to walk for the child of God. These things exist. These things are real. In verse 10, notice the word return. There is such a thing as a return. And notice Zion, we sang about that earlier. And it says Zion with songs and everlasting joy and gladness. I'm here to tell you there's a big difference between Zion with songs and everlasting joy than there is the wilderness and the solitary place in the desert. Huge difference. This exists. This is not a fairy tale. These things are real. They exist right now. That is, our lives, we that are saved, can be the experience of spiritual gladness, spiritual rejoicing, spiritual blossoming, spiritual beauty, strength, steadiness, calmness, deliverance, ability, abundance, safety, Zion, songs, and joy. These things exist right now. And the redeemed and the ransomed of the Lord, our lives do not have to be a spiritual wilderness. Our lives do not have to be a solitary place or a desert. And our lives do not have to be like the parched ground and the thirsty land and the habitation of dragons. The redeemed and the ransomed of the Lord, our lives do not have to be marked by spiritual weakness, spiritual feebleness, worry, blindness, deafness, lameness, dumbness. And if we succumb to such, and we will from time to time, you don't have to stay there. Because these other things exist. We don't have to stay there because there is an eye-popping, mind-boggling, transforming power of God. And we see it throughout this 35th chapter. Notice, in verses 1 and 2, God can change the spiritual dreariness of the wilderness and the solitary place in the desert. He can change that into gladness and beauty. Oh, that He would do so. He can elevate our vision from the wilderness and the solitary place in the desert to what we read to see the glory of the Lord and the excellency of our God. In verse 3, He can transform inability to ability. He can, in verse 4, transform spiritual attitudes. Say to them that are of a fearful heart, be strong, fear not. God in His almighty power can change attitudes. We can get terrible attitudes. Just awful. And terrible attitudes are like poison. It's like poison. It spreads. Good attitudes don't seem to spread like bad attitudes. But bad attitudes spread. God can transform bad attitudes. He can warm and make tender the cold in the callous heart. He can fascinate that heart that is so crowded and so packed full and so distracted and pulled with the things of the world. He can fascinate that heart with Himself. And He can bring into submission the heart that is filled with its own selfish ways and agendas. And He can humble the proud and the self-righteous heart and fill with thankfulness the heart that is unthankful. In verse 5, He can transform spiritual unawareness to awareness. Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened. He can transform spiritual unawareness to spiritual awareness. The deaf ears shall be unstopped. And there are so many who are spiritually unaware. They're just unaware. They have no clue. They have absolutely no clue. They're deaf. They're stone deaf. And God can unstop their ears. He can transform spiritual deformity, we see. He can cause the lame to leap. God can do that. We can't. He can loosen the tongue of the dumb or the tongue of the silent, give them a song to sing. We also see that He can cause waters and springs to burst forth in the desert and in the wilderness, there in verse 6. In verse 7, He can transform the parched ground into a pool. Big difference between a parched ground and a pool. God can do that just like that. He can transform the thirsty land into springs of water. And He can transform the dust and the dirt, the sand, in the vibrant colors of plant life, where each lay shall be grass with reeds and rushes. And in verse 10, He can cause those who were in the wilderness, in the solitary place, in the desert, to return to Zion. And they will return with Zion with songs and everlasting joy upon their heads. This is mind-boggling transformation. It's transformation that is clearly seen. That is clearly seen. People will say, well, the Lord revived me. The only problem is it doesn't show. So He didn't. He didn't. All of this is obvious. When God causes water to break out in the wilderness, that's obvious. When God causes streams to flow in the desert, that's obvious. When the parched ground all of a sudden becomes a pool, and the thirsty land has springs of water, all of that is obvious. God's transformation is obvious. We need Isaiah 35. We need to experience this. God can transform filthy into clean, rebellious into obedience, offensive into acceptable. And on we could go. God can. God does. Oh, how we ought to long for the transforming power of the Lord. The psalmist prayed in Psalm 85 and verse 6, "Revive us." That ought to always be the desire of our heart. We read in verse 4 of our text, He, God, will come and save you. He will come and save you. And oh, that He would come in a mighty way to bring strength to the exhausted, steadiness to the feeble, calm to the fearful. We see all of this here in Isaiah 35. Cause the spiritually blind to see. Cause the spiritually deaf to hear. Cause the spiritually lame to leap. How sad if we come into the house of God spiritually lame and go out of the house of God spiritually lame. We ought to leap. God can do that. Cause the spiritually silent to sing. Oh, it ought to be our desire. It ought to be our longing. God would come upon us in a mighty way. That waters would break out in the wilderness. So that streams would flow in the desert. There are some, you live in the wilderness. You need the water to break out. You live in the desert. You need streams to flow in the desert. And for the burning sand to become a pool of water. And for the waters to gush forth in the midst of the dryness. And all of a sudden there's green pastures. God can do that. And that's what Isaiah is speaking of. And God can, you can walk in the wilderness, you can walk in the solitary place, the desert, and all, and you can be in this terrible condition, but God can set your feet on the highway of holiness. That's what he speaks of. And the highway of holiness, where does it lead? It leads to Zion, where there's singing and joy. There are God's people. The redeemed and the ransomed of the Lord. And their lives are ugly. Ugly spiritual lives. Appalling. Sickening. But God can take that and transform it into beauty. You can't legislate spiritual beauty. And if you think for a moment you can, all you are is a religionist. This is something God can do. And it's something that we ought to long for. It's something that we ought to plead. God calls this to happen. And we ought to expect it to happen. People today, for the most part, again, I'm not putting everybody in this category, but overall, it's true. People come, people pray, they don't expect anything. People come to church, they don't expect anything. That's why they miss so easily. They don't expect anything to happen anyway. We ought to come expecting. We ought to come praying that God would transform lives. You know, people talk all the time, God's people. You just sit back and listen, which I do often. Contrary to common belief, I don't say everything I think. In fact, I don't say most things I think. I wouldn't be here if I did. None of us would. But you listen to people talk, and they're scared. They're scared politically, they're scared what's going to happen to the world. I believe I can honestly say those things don't really worry me. What concerns me, and I need to get my eyes more on God so that I'm not so anxious about it. What concerns me is not the Muslims, the homosexuals, and whoever else you want to name. What concerns me is God's people. Because there's where the trouble is. They do not get it. And by the time they do, it'll be too late. What discourages me, and again, I'm not justifying discouragement. What discourages me is not that some enemy power is going to take over the United States. What discourages me is the attitudes of God's people. Because they don't get it. And there's little hope of them getting it because they've been sitting there for decades. And my human mind has to think, well, if they don't get it by now, they're certainly not going to. And it gets discouraging. We've got to get beyond that and realize God can transform lives. I'm not praying, God, keep the enemy powers out of the United States. I'm praying, God, make your people right. Cause them to get serious about serving God. Cause them to be more committed to the Lord than a job. That's what concerns me. I look at preachers, and it's the same thing. It's the same thing. People won't pastor until all their financial ducks are in a row. That sickens me. It really does. Be committed to the Lord. So many young preachers, why am I going to pastor there? They can't pay me. Then get out and quit. Don't even pretend that you're serving God because you're not. These are the things. And again, I need to get over it. And some of you are probably thinking right now, I wish you would. And get my eyes on God. Lord, please, would you transform your people? Would you begin with me? We must always begin with me. That's where we must begin. But what we read here is real. And it can happen. And I pray that it will. For a long time. Well, I shouldn't say that. For a while. And I've already mentioned it. I have been under satanic assault. I have never had more difficulty in all my ministry preparing for messages that I do now. Because the devil has a way of getting our minds to go a thousand different directions. And I stop and I pray, God, help me. Help me, Lord. I can't do this. You've got to help me. And he does. And another 15 minutes goes by and it starts all over again. And there you are again. Lord, please help me. I can't keep dwelling upon these things. Help me. And the devil whispers in my mind over and over and over, why are you studying anyway? You're just wasting your time. I know that's not true. But that's what's happening. And it's a continuous assault. And I talk to others. I talked to a pastor the other day. He called me about something. And he asked me how I was doing. Usually the standard answer, fine, everything's fine. And I said, well, brother, I need a lot of prayer. I said, I'm struggling more now than I probably ever have. And told him what I just told you. And he said, brother, that's a real encouragement to me. I said, well, I didn't mean it to be an encouragement to you. He said, every time I've seen you at a conference, I've thought in my mind, there is a man who has no problems. There is a man who has it all together. Brother, what you've told me encourages me. And I thought, how in the world could someone look at another person and say, well, there's somebody who doesn't have any problems. God help us. God help us. I pray. It just seems to be my constant words of late. God help me. Help me. Help me. Help me. Over and over and over and over again. And he does, and he will continue to do so. But my point is this. Isaiah 35 is real. It's real in my life. It's real in your life. And we need to get our minds on these things. We all know how the human mind works, or we should. It's easy to say, well, just don't think about that. Try it sometime. You need God's help. You need God's help. And God does deliver. So just pray that God keep giving me enough sense at least to pray, Lord, help me. Help me, God. Help me. Help me. And oh, that God would come down and make Isaiah 35 real. Each one of us. Brother Larry, would you come and lead us verse song? You notice